Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome. You're with me, Robert Moss, and the Way of the Dreamer show, where we celebrate the power of dreams, coincidence, and imagination in our lives. Welcome to 2025. This is our first show, so Happy New Year. And we'll be thinking and talking about dreaming into the year ahead. We're not going to go political, but we know we live in a crazy world with crazy things going on. And in that crazy world, one of the things to be said about dreaming and dreamers is it gives us a safe and indeed sacred space to be sane, to do things beyond the obvious, perhaps to find things that can heal and repair our lives and the communities around us, and to be together with others who care, who are connected to soul, who are connected to basic values, who understand that one of the functions of dreams is to restore our inner compass, so we can find our true north, whatever direction on the map that might be our purpose. Well, one of the person that I'm with for this show is a dear friend of mine, one of the sisters I never had biologically. We've been sharing dreams in many senses for many, many years, since the mid-1980s, actually. Her name is Wanda Easter Birch. I first met her when I was drawn to connection with a man who lived in the 18th century. His name was William Johnson. He was an Irishman who came to the American colonies looking for fortune and fame, and he found both of them. He also found the Mohawk Indians, and he became the king's superintendent of Indians out on the Mohawk frontier, the Wild East, far more dangerous to white people than the Wild West ever was. When I went looking for him, knowing that there was some connection, I met Wanda, who at that time was site manager of his last home. So we had an interest in history, had an interest in the Mohawk frontier and the lives of the different communities that lived there. We discovered very, very quickly in our relationship that we had a shared interest in dreams and may indeed have been dreaming of each other, or at least that Wanda had been dreaming of me since we were 9 years old. Wanda is the author of two extraordinary books. One is called She Who Dreams. It's a book about a personal experience of healing through dreaming. It's one of the best books on that subject you can find. Go look for it, She Who Dreams. And the other is a historical book, because she is a historian capable of great depth research. If my memory serves, it's on my shelf, but it's not in front of me. It's something like The Home Fires Sound Louder Than the Drums. It's a book,
if you'll correct me.
What is the correct title?
The Home Voices Speak Louder
Than the Voices.
Drums. Home
Voices. Home Voices Speak Louder Than the Drums?
Yes.
All right. It's a book about dreams and imagination in the American Civil War. The amount of research that it brings together is astonishing. And it's one of the most important books on the role of dreaming in American history. And maybe there are lessons for us in what Wanda gleaned from the diaries, the letters, the reports of soldiers and civilians on both sides in the American Civil War. Wanda is, of course, also a dreamer. She's led dream retreats, arts and dreams retreats. And she's somebody, I think one could say, whose very life was partially saved and certainly renewed by her intimate involvement in dreaming. She's one of those who, in her sharing with me, helped to grow the core techniques of active dreaming, which is my preferred name, the original synthesis of dream work and shamanism I brought to the world. Welcome, Wanda.
Thank you very much.
Well, I have no agenda for this class. I'm calling it a class because I lead so many online classes, for this conversation, except to celebrate you and the extraordinary friendship we've had centered on dreams for all these years. And perhaps we could talk a little bit about the origin of that friendship 30 years before we met each other. talk about your dream when you were in Tennessee at age 9 years old of a drowning boy.
That I was reminded of that one day. I think we were sitting in your backyard, and you asked me what was the earliest dream you remember. And I almost talked about little childhood dreams of cartoon characters and that sort of thing, and I decided not to. I decided to talk about a dream that I remembered when I was 9 years old. And in that dream, I had gone down to down a grassy meadow to a lake, or it appeared to be a lake, and there was a boat on the lake, and there was a boy in the boat about my age. And the boy, it was in shallow water, so I thought, oh, he's doing fine. And he fell out of the boat, or somehow managed to get out of the boat and into the water, and I expected him to just stand up, and he didn't. He was floundering in the water, and I was thinking at first, why don't you just stand up and walk out? And he seemed to be unable to do that. So I reached out, and I took his hand, and I pulled him out of the water. And I sat there looking at Robert that day, and I thought, I feel somehow there's a connection.
This becomes a remarkable story, believe it or not, because when I was that age, Wanda and I are about the same age, just a few months between us. She's my kid sister, but only by a few months. When I was 9 years old, I had been out on a fishing boat, boat fishing. Not a fisherman's boat, not a professional boat, but been out on a boat fishing with my father somewhere off the shore in Melbourne, Australia. And getting off the boat, walking a gangplank, as I recall, I slipped and fell into fairly shallow waters. And nobody paid any heed because, you know, I'm Australian, we can all swim. What's the problem? There he is right next to the shore, between the boat and the shore. And I was drowning. And I can still remember my short life swirling around inside my head, and I was drowning until someone reached down. On this occasion, I think one of my father's friends, and pulled me out. So Wanda dreams of a round-faced boy about her same age, as she, who is drowning in a way that is really sort of inexplicable, and she reaches and pulls him out around the same time. We can't confirm the exact date, of course. But someone in Australia on the other side of the world pulls me, a drowning boy, out of the water. So it's the kind of connection, kind of matchup, that certainly gives you shivers, pleasurable shivers of recognition, and makes you aware that something is going on. As Wanda and I came to share dreams, we were also sharing adventures in travel, adventures in history, adventures in remembering the traditions of earlier times in what were then the American colonies, how people lived, how the Palatine Germans lived, how the Scots lived, how the English and the Dutch, and above all, how the Iroquois, the Six Nations of the Longhouse, lived in the Mohawk Valley and further west. We discovered that it was really interesting to share dreams in two major senses. First of all, to develop a patois, I mean a way of sharing dreams. Whenever we saw each other, and we gradually brought other people into this, which was fun and enabled us to offer our feedback without presuming to tell the other person what the dream meant, and led to some kind of action to embody the dream. So this was the origin of what became the Lightning Dreamwork process, which is a simple four-step technique for exploring a dream within friends or between strangers, if you follow the guidelines, and getting to some kind of action that brings magic, healing, energy into the world. But Wanda and I were sharing dreams in a second sense. I mean, we would enter the same dream space. Sometimes we do it in intention. Let's go on a journey. Let's travel to a certain place and see what we can find. Sometimes it would happen spontaneously. Sometimes it would seem that we're inside each other's dreams. I remember, Wanda, a very big dream for me and for you. I was having a dream or a vision, a night vision, for which I am admitted, after some challenge, to a circle of magnificent warrior lords of different cultures. I mean, they're all kitted out for the
for the scene. They have plumed helmets or crowns, different costumes. They're gathered round an immense table that burns like an amethyst fire. And there's some kind of acceptance and confirmation or initiation going on. And the following morning, you told me you had dreamed that you saw me in a circle of warrior chiefs gathered around a purple fire. And a woman leans over me and says, "I will raise him out of death. I will send him into battle." Huge dreams in which it seems as if you, at least as a witness, were in the same dream with me and were able to give me an account. So Wanda and I, in these early exchanges, were learning something fundamental about dreaming that used to be understood by ancient dreaming cultures where people knew what they were doing, but is still rarely recognized and understood, even by the lucid dreamers and dream enthusiasts of our day. The reality is, dreaming doesn't have to be a solo activity. In fact, for indigenous peoples, it is seen as a social activity. You get out and about. You meet other people, living or dead, in the eyes of the world. You meet beings, human and other than human. You have social engagement and interaction. You can do this with intention, so you can travel together in dreaming. And, of course, from our perhaps more limited understanding of what dreaming might be, when we first have the experience of being in a dream with another person and being able to confirm and back up each other's impressions, that provides a very important kind of objective seeming confirmation of the reality of the experience. Tell us some of your memories, Wanda, of sharing dreams with me or with anybody else in either sense of the value of having someone be your sounding board when you have a story to tell, and of what becomes possible in what they sometimes call mutual dreaming when you're traveling with someone else into a different space.
I remember one in that same period of time when we were researching your book on William Johnson, and I thought it was funny at the time because I woke up and you were with a Mohawk woman. I thought she was a Mohawk woman, and I don't remember now all of the details, but I remember the final thing she said to me is, "This is no island," or I think the final thing you said to her was, "This is no island, woman." And I wasn't sure exactly if that was the exact phrase or not, but I called you up, and you were working with a character, and you had called her Island Woman. And that was one that was moving directly into what you were doing. I might not have gotten it exactly right, but I got the words. And you recognized them and recognized that I was seeing you with this new character in your book.
Well, you certainly dreamed into my activity, and perhaps I should tell a little bit of a story that you know, but that our listeners don't know either at all or at least in full. I mean, I was pulled onto the path of a teacher of dreaming. I've always been a dreamer, but I was pulled onto the path of teaching other people how to dream, because I dreamed with characters who lived on the New York frontier in the 1700s. We've mentioned William Johnson, the Irishman. I dreamed also with members of a Mohawk family that influenced him greatly. And the person in particular, among several Mohawk characters in my dreams, was a woman who became mother of the Wolf Clan of the Mohawk people, who summoned me, who called me in a dream across time, it seemed, and across dimensions. And I heard her name as Dewatakwas, which means something like the woman from the island across the water, which was a name by which the Mohawk might identify someone from the Huron or Wendat people, a related people, but historically enemies, adversaries of the Mohawk. The woman I'm talking about has a history. My research enabled me to find her. She was a woman who was adopted by a Mohawk raiding party aged 4 or 5 from an island in Lake Ontario back in, I guess, the late 1600s. And she was a Rondiwana, a woman of power. As I say, she became mother of the Wolf Clan of the Mohawk people. She knew a lot about dreaming and taught me a lot about her ways across 250 years or more of TikTok time and across dimensions. And I decided to call her Island Woman for simplicity. That's the name she's given in my books. She first appears in one of my novels, and then she appears in a book called Dreamways of the Iroquois. So you've given an example of dreaming into someone else's material that gives confirmation that you're both doing something together in the dream space. And this is important because it reassures us, it reassures the skeptic, the rationalist skeptic in the left brain, that, hey, something is going on here that transcends or eludes the normal range of knowledge and information available to us, that in dreaming we have the ability to see, perceive, travel, feel across distance, to exhibit all of the supernormal phenomena that my Victorian friend Frederick Myers talked about. That word supernormal is now in book titles these days, but he invented it back in the Victorian period, to, as a phrase, to embrace things like precognition, clairvoyance, telepathy, which is another word he invented. And you've had plenty of experience of that, haven't you? And you've known what it is to see into the possible future and be able to act on the information. And you know what it is. We've already given examples to have telepathy or clairvoyance of things happening at a distance. Talk a little bit about this. I mean, to put it in very colloquial terms, it would be fair to say we're all quite psychic in our dreams, wouldn't it? Even people who don't pay attention.
Well, and I think we did this together a couple of times in workshops. There was one I particularly remember, once again, with the Mohawk people. I traveled with you into Canada to a workshop with women, women who had been abused, who had suffered trauma, and you had been invited by one of the clan mothers, and we drove into the Tyendinega village in Brantford and spent the evening in a lodge that the drawers were set up to accept the special ceremonial jewelry of the Mohawk people if they stayed there. And we were in a sort of an interesting environment where all of these people had gathered together. And that night, we were talking about who we were going to be seeing and meeting in this group of traumatized and women who were trying to find their way out of difficult situations and difficult dreams. And I woke up the next morning, I shared with you, you shared a dream, and I shared a dream with you of seeing a woman with large glasses, a young woman with long black hair, and she had two children, and they were strapped in chairs that were in a very small room, and she didn't know how to help them. And I told you the dream, or shared with you the dream, and we decided when we went in, because this was the first morning of the workshop, that we would look for this person. And I sat on one end of the room, and you sat on the other. You sat near the clan mother, who was the person who had invited us to this workshop. And I turned around, and sitting beside me was a young woman with long dark hair, and it came to light that she was the daughter of the clan mother, and they had not spoken to one another for decades. And she felt that she was trapped in a relationship of abuse, and she felt that her mother, the clan mother, was responsible for this. And the two had not come to any kind of resolution. And the force that drew them together was a grandfather who had abused her children. And these were the children who were tied with ropes and chairs in the small room. So we began to work with that dream and with those two people. And finally, they were together, hugging each other, asking for forgiveness, and sharing the stories of what happened in their lives and how it tore them apart.
Thank you for the memories, which confirm something about our relations with the future and how they're mediated by dreams. Dreams not only show us the future, they help us prepare for what lies ahead. And so a dream like this can alert the dreamer, and on this occasion more than one person, to the need to be ready for something to begin to unfold and to handle it perhaps better than they would do otherwise. I could think of many dreams of my own, and perhaps you could think of many of yours as well, in which I feel I have been rehearsed, I mean, in great detail sometimes, or a tricky or moving situation in a workshop or actually in any other field of activity in life. So dreams, by my observation and experience, are constantly rehearsing us the challenges and opportunities that lie ahead. And if you're missing out on that, you're missing out on something really good, and you can learn to start catching up again. Well, I think we're just going to say something very quickly and practical about that. You want to tap into your ability to dream the future and shape it for the better and avoid unwanted future situations and move towards happy ones. Well, keep a journal, of course, write down your dreams and ask of all dream information, however weird it might seem. Can this happen in the future, literally or symbolically? Do I like it? If so, what steps do I need to take to manifest it? If I don't like it, what steps do I need to take to avoid it? That's how you get good, not only at seeing the future, but at using the future to manage, to at least using the future information to manage the future better. You're listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. We're in celebratory mood as we enter the new year with a very good dream friend, Wanda Birch. We'll be back after the break.
Where can you find out about dreams and the dream world? MossDreams.com. At MossDreams.com, you can find out about Robert Moss, his work, and discover the way of the dreamer. Read numerous articles and essays on almost every facet of dreams. Find out Robert's class and workshop schedule. Read reviews and so much more. Visit MossDreams.com to find your way of the dreamer. That's MossDreams.com.
Robert Moss has a deep engagement with the dream world, and now you can take a crash course from this master of active dreaming at your own pace. That's right. You can get Robert's 8 exciting half-hour programs on a new DVD set called Way of the Dreamer. Share Robert's story as a dreamer and dream healer. This dynamic 3-DVD set can help teach you how to find your way through your dreams to realize your full potential. Don't wait to learn the practical dreamwork techniques that can help you understand how to attain better health, emotional stability, spiritual awareness, and more. Order Way of the Dreamer DVDs today from Amazon.com or MossDreams.com. That's MossDreams.com.
We're HealthyLife.net, reaching and helping a worldwide audience without hype, without shock, and without shenanigans.
We have so much to talk about, Wanda Birch, in relation to dreaming and all the years we've spent sharing dreams and learning about what the dreamlands offer together. Here's one that is in my mind. It has a couple of aspects because of dreams I recorded a couple of nights ago. So I call the whole sequence the Rocky Bardo, as in Bardo State, transitions after death in particular. I seem to visit very quickly in that lucid state between sleeping and waking. Lucid, yet you're not in control. You're roaming around. So I seem to roam around many possible afterlife situations. That's the general context. Let me home in on one scene, just one scene, because otherwise it might get very rocky and very confusing. I'm approaching a depot. In Australian English, we'd say depot, but we'll call it a depot, so we all know what we're talking about. It's a simple wooden building with a sort of tin roof, maybe, with a red door and no obvious openings in the walls. And it's standing on a curving road with some grass, small garden, small park perhaps near it. And behind it is the ocean. And there's a jetty, a dock, running out into the ocean. And boats come and go, ferry boats, I think. And I know this place well, but only from the outside. I've been here many times before, and in the lucid dream, I'm thinking, I've been here again and again. So what is this? Is it a takeoff point for possible afterlife? I have the feeling that's what it is, and in the context, I'm pretty sure that's what it is. And the ferry boats interest me, but I can't really tell where they're going or coming or going. And I look across the waters, and there's a sort of bright haze, and I can't really make out anything about what might be on the other side. I'm intensely curious. And eventually I think, well, I've never been inside this building. Maybe since I'm here now and lucid and can make choices, maybe I'll go through the red door if I can. And I go through the red door, and I'm in a space that seems much bigger and more modern and brighter than the outside. It's one of those places that is bigger inside than out. And there's a fellow at a counter or desk wearing a sort of green visor, the way the people used to wear, you know, to keep the glare off in an office, that kind of visor. He's very friendly, and he greets me, and I look around the place, and there are some travel posters, and I'm astonished. They're for cheerful locales, they're for tropical islands, they're for Morocco. He says, yes, Morocco. Lots of people are in Morocco these days. I think, well, I quite like the sound of Morocco. I did some reading recently about Moroccan colors and textiles and Berber customs and dreaming in Morocco, for that matter. And we have this encounter, and it's very friendly, and he doesn't push me to do anything, and I don't decide to do anything, and we understand this is sort of part of an orientation trip I am making. It's not really quite resolved. And I leave the building, and things continue to unfold. I'll stop there. It's a vignette, I hope a sufficiently colorful vignette to be worth exploring. So if I offer this to you, and I put it into the context of my understanding, but let's drop that. If I just offer you the scene of the depot and what it's like inside as well as outside and the ferry boats coming and going, how would you lead me into a discussion, or what kind of feedback would you give me? You could do the lightning framework process through its steps.
I think you've already given it a name. I would ask you if you had a name for this dream.
Right.
Vision.
The depot.
And then I would need to know what your feelings were when you woke from this dream.
Intense curiosity, some anxiety, less the product of that scene by itself than what went before or after. Some anxiety in the sense that I feel that I'm being shown afterlife, takeoff points for the afterlife, but don't quite know how to evaluate or handle what I'm being shown. So some anxiety.
Do you recognize anything in this dream? A person, the place itself, the surroundings, other things that you see in the dream? Do you recognize them in
the depot? The depot is deeply familiar to me, but only from dreams. Or simply from dreams. I don't know this place, I'm pretty sure, in ordinary reality. Could I run into a place that looks like this? Certainly. However, its familiarity is that I've been here before in dreams. I've come to this point, looked at this place before. Yes, I've taken ferries back and forth with summer vacations in Vermont. We would always cross Lake Champlain by ferry. So that is sort of generically familiar. The idea of the ferry as a way of crossing between life and the afterlife is not only something that I know from mythology, but a sort of script that I've used in guiding group journeys to explore the possible afterlife. We've actually taken a boat or a crossing by water to go to the other side of death. So that's familiar in the world of the imagination, the world of, let's say, shamanic rehearsal for the afterlife. So the fellow with the visor, I don't think I know him. I had been thinking about Morocco recently. I've actually never been to Morocco. It's one of those places I would actually love to go, but I've never been there in the physical world.
Now that you've thought about these very familiar scenes from other dreams, from other places that you've been, is there something about this one, a special question that you have, a special thing that you would like to know? Is there something that you're burning to ask about this dream that you need to explore further?
Well, I was sort of burning after the dream, actually, and I might still be burning. I mean, I'd like to know what the travel options are. I left out something about my conversation with the fellow with the green visor. I was sort of set at a point, are these destinations for real? I mean, here's this poster of Morocco. And he said something like, well, you know, we try to give people images that they will enjoy. We try to start them out with some version of an environment that will suit them. So already there's the idea that the imagination is shaping or controlling the presentation of certain afterlife scenarios. So I'd like to know where the boats are going. What are the options for destination travel? Whether it's simply dream travel or whether it's a dream that takes you to the afterlife. I mean, I'd like to know more about all of that.
I thought about if this were my dream, which I know is the next thing that you ask people to do. You ask them to speak from their own experience and to find maybe something that you recognize when they say, if it were my dream, or maybe a common experience. And I thought of two things when you mentioned the afterlife. One of my favorite Arlo Guthrie songs is being on the last train in the station, and you better get yourself prepared because you've already paid the fee, and now it's time to go, and it's okay. You know, you're ready to leave, and I thought about that one. But what I really thought about was a dream my son had of being in a similar building with one door and no windows. He had just joined the Coast Guard, had no idea what he was going to be doing, and he entered that building, and he needed to know more. And as the years progressed, he re-entered that building over and over again, and each time the building expanded. There were windows that appeared. There was finally a door on the opposite side, and he could see boats leaving for his next destination. So his dream grew.
Oh, that's a wonderful story about a dream locale that is repeated but is growing both in what it is and your ability to use it over time. We're talking with Wanda Birch. We'll be back for more about dreaming into this new year after the break.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com. Get your personal dream symbols and discover the ones you dream about in Linda McKenzie's Symbols of You, a new book available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, and more.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net, the radio network that brings positive talk with positive change to make your world a little better.
You're listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. Do hop over to mossdreams.com, my website. You'll see I'm leading a bunch of new online courses starting soon, and we're actually launching the new cycle of the Dream Teacher trainings, the Teachers of Active Dreaming, which people do for self-knowledge, self-development, and for the fun of being with a warm, hard-centered community, and they also do it to contribute to the cause of rebirthing a dreaming society in our world, in our time. Wanda Birch, our wonderful guest, one of my dream sisters, is the author of a couple of books you might want to check out, She Who Dreams and The Home Voices Speak Louder Than the Drums. The first is a personal story, a brave and beautiful one of healing with the help of dream work, and the second, a history of dreams and imagination in the time of the American Civil War. Wanda, one reason that people think about dreams and sometimes start talking about dreams for the first time is that they encounter someone who is deceased, someone who is dead in the eyes of the world. And as we trace the whole history of what people have looked for in dreams on the planet as far back as we can go, we can see this was always a preoccupation. There's a Lakota saying that the path of dreams after death is the path of the soul after death is the path of the soul in dreams. In other words, in dreams you leave the body, you travel somewhere else. In death it's the same thing, except you don't come back to the same body. I happen to believe this is true, and as the first professor of anthropology at Oxford, Sir Edward Tyler, wrote back in 1871 in the Victorian era, it is probable that the main reason that humans developed the belief or the understanding that soul or consciousness survives death is they notice that soul or consciousness travels in dreaming. So let's talk a little bit about our experiences, our direct first-hand experiences, and our reflections on them, of meeting the departed in dreams and learning in dreaming what afterlife environments might be like. You've met people who are deceased from this world who seem to have created really interesting living spaces on the other side, haven't you?
I have, yes. One of the latest dreams that I've had was one night I woke up in a very, very real experience with a friend who had recently died. He was an architect in the little hamlet where I lived. And there he was, and he was showing me a group of some plans that he was an architect, as I said, and he loved to do hand drawing. He knew, you know, he used the computers too, but he still liked to do drafting with pen and paper, and he was a fabulous artist. So he was showing me, so excited about all the things that he's still doing on the other side, and he has all of these magnificent drawings that he's got in a packet, but one of them is a boat that he wants to restore, and I see the boat. It's on almost like stilts or some sort of cradle, like you see in a marina where they're storing a yacht or a large boat. But this cradle is not in a marina; it's in the Stockade, a historic district in Schenectady, New York. And it's in a parking lot at the end of the street. Well, the Stockade was his residence at that time. And as a matter of fact, his house was on a dead-end street near the river. And there was a small parking lot, very much like the one I see in the dream. And this boat is in this cradle. And it's not a building, but he's excited about it because this is a project he always wanted to do. He always wanted to restore a boat. And there it is. And it's absolutely beautiful. So I wake up, and I call his wife. And I think she might be interested in this dream because she's been very lonely and very depressed without Frank. And I tell her the dream, and she's absolutely filled with joy because she said that, interestingly enough and coincidentally, she had picked up a folder of old drawings and old memories. And she remembered that one of the first stories Frank told her is that he once restored a canoe. Not a big boat, it was a canoe. But it sort of whetted his taste for wanting to do something more with boats. And she was very excited, and she firmly believes now that she's going to meet somebody in the Stockade who is restoring a boat like this one. And she firmly believes that Frank is still helping people on the other side, and he's still drawing plans, and he's still doing things with architecture on his side and architecture on this side, and that he will indeed be helping someone restore a boat in the stockade, and she's going to keep an eye out for a boat on stilts in the little parking lot just two doors down from her house.
I love it. So if I'm following you correctly, so Frank is doing his thing on the other side, but he's also leaning in to support and inspire and guide someone on this side if such a person isn't available to do something
yes.
here on this earth that he would have liked to do. Is that it?
That's it.
And yeah, well, that's beautiful when you think about it. We do have accounts, and of course you and I are particularly interested in our first-hand experiences. We do actually have a lot of accounts of people doing things on the other side that they enjoyed
yes.
here, but maybe doing them better and with less fuss and with less prep work required, doing them faster, you know, the what dreams may come theme of painting your reality on the other side might be fairly realistic. And then of leaning through, I had a dream that became terrifying some time ago, Wanda. I dreamed that I was in debt. I was on the other side, very alive, and still writing and reading and researching, and doing it quite well and really engrossed in it. But one of my pleasures in this alternate reality where I am already dead was inspiring writers here to write better and get things done really well. And I enjoyed this. I thought, oh, that's why angels do what they do, because it's such fun. I made the mistake of telling this dream at a writing retreat, and I noticed all the people are looking at me hungrily. They're thinking, when's he going to die so he can fulfill his dream and start beaming inspiration and dictating our drafts to us? So that dream became a bit scary. But I don't rule out the fact that I might do something like that. In the dream, I really enjoyed the fact that I could create interesting books in this way without having to sit down and tap on the keyboard or try to read my indecipherable handwriting myself. So it is interesting. So we learn in these direct ways that more is available. There are more options available on both sides of death than we might have been told. And we do confirm, and you and I have already told several stories that make this point, we do confirm that life is not confined to what is experienced in the body in one span of years, that there is something before and something after. That's a very important thing to know, because it does help us to live on the ups and downs of this life, and sometimes even to rise to a sense of divine comedy, if you know that this is not the end of the story. So, you know, there are future installments to be lived, future chapters to be written. We're talking to Wanda Easterbirch. She has written two marvelous books about dreaming, one about healing based on her personal experience of dreaming through healing through dream work, She Who Dreams, and one that is a very important history of dreams and imagination in the time of the American Civil War. The home voices speak louder than the drums. We'll be back to share more about dreaming and where it can take you after the break.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
You're listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Mouse. Our wonderful guest is Wanda Burch, B-U-R-C-H. If you're looking at her online, that's how you spell her name, and you will find her. And she's worth finding because she's become really an excellent dream ambassador, dream teacher, exemplar of how healing and illuminating dreaming might be and how it can lead us to a deeper appreciation of the secret order of events, which we're going to want to need as this year and subsequent years unfold. So let's think about this for a moment. As I look at the whole history of dream experience, not theories about dreams, but how people have dreamed, what they've looked for in dreams, how they've shared things in dreams, I see that there are two broad attitudes towards dreaming in human history. And let's forget the reductionist stuff and the Freudian stuff and the psychological stuff. People who dream or are interested in dreams have tended to be looking for one or both of two things. This is a very broad brush. They've been looking for liberation, or moksha in Sanskrit, for evolution, for transcendence, for rising to a higher plane, for getting off the wheel of repetition. They've been looking for spiritual growth, advancement, nirvana eventually, or they've been looking to do better in this world, to enjoy the wheel of samsara, and to get on with it. So when you go to India, you find all these ascetic and transcendental approaches to spirituality and dreaming, and then you find the village fortune teller who listens to your dreams and tries to tell you how you can get a clue for them, how to find the right husband, or how to make some money, or how to pay the bills, or feed the family. And dreams, in truth, I think, serve both purposes. Dreams take us to a higher level of understanding of what it's all about. They can take us to the level of remembering our own soul purpose, and remembering that there are worlds beyond the physical that are more real, arguably, rather than less real. They can take us to the god or goddess we can talk to. And on the other hand, dreams can help us with all sorts of practical things by giving us tools and resources beyond the obvious. They can help us to get through. And you and I, Wanda, both know many stories from history and from observation and from experience where dreams have shown us the way. I'm thinking now in my somewhat bumpy publishing history, dreams have alerted me to situations that were developing which I may not have liked, was able to navigate better, helped me to set the right kind of agenda in confused situations. So let's talk about that for a moment. Let's talk about the practical value of dreams in terms of giving you and me and people we know some means of getting through that they might not have had without the dream advisory. Can you think of a particular example of that?
My favorite comes out of workshops for women veterans that I led to an organization in the Adirondack Mountains. And one of my favorite dreamers or dreams in that period took place at a 19th century women's resort along Lake George called Wiawaka. And the woman who dreamed this dream had been a traffic controller in Vietnam. And like all of these women, she had suffered trauma. And we did not get into the exact, her exact description of that trauma. But she brought a dream with her, and she decided she would like to do a technique that you introduced to our groups a long time ago called Dream Theater. She called the dream the Red Dress. And she asked people to help her portray this dream, and finally when we reached the point where she walked back into the dream herself, the dream involved wearing a red dress and dancing and dancing and dancing in this beautiful red dress, dancing to the edge of a gate. But she couldn't go through the gate. So everyone took their roles, and they helped her with the dream, and she was in the center, finally, in the second reenactment of it, and she was the person, she was her own person in the dream, and she's dancing and dancing, and she collapses once again at the gate. She still can't go through it. But she got up, and she said, I will, before this day is over. So a little while later, I look out, and there's paddle boats that you can take out at Wiawaka. And there she is. She has beautiful, long dreadlocks. And she's sitting in this little paddle boat, and she has a fishing pole. And she's fishing at Lake George. So she comes in, and she walks toward me. And I said, so, did you go through the gate? She said, damn straight I did. And she was all smiles. And we came back in. And she had waltzed through the gate, and beyond the gate was her grandmother. And her grandmother hugged her and held her, and she wept. And there seemed to be an overall feeling of release and joy like I had never seen around the circle of this room. And I didn't quite understand the impact of what had just happened. I understood that she was able to go through, meet her grandmother, and that this was wonderful. It was beyond that. But I didn't understand it for several more weeks, and she wrote to me, and she said, I need to explain. She said, the gate, the arched gate, is bigger than me. It represents, for women suffering trauma, men too, in the military, it represents breaking through the walls of PTSD. And she said the person who embraced her was her grandmother, but it was also the person welcoming you on the other side and congratulating you on finally making it through this horrible thing that has plagued you all of your life. And she continued to write to me, and she said she had the dream over and over, and each time she went through the gate, something more wonderful happened. And she was able to continue to release all the anxiety and all the trauma in her life. And she didn't fully describe the specifics of what happened to her, but it happened, and that was what was important.
What a magnificent story, damn straight indeed. And, of course, it introduces another core technique of our active dreaming approach, which is dream theater, which is the pinnacle of improv. Dream theater, as we practice it, is when you take a dream or something like a dream and you cast it, and you have people in the group play different roles, and you act it out, and then you might act it out again and add another chapter, add another scene, maybe to head towards healing and resolution, so that the central figure gets through the gate, for example, and finds out what's on the other side. It is actually my favorite thing in the in-person live workshops, one of the things I miss doing with all the online courses I lead. So I must say, Wanda, even in the online courses, we've started doing a little bit of dream theater. It might just be really waving our hands about or putting on a hat or throwing a scarf around the neck, but we're doing a little bit of it even on Zoom. It's funny how, you know, we can improvise and get things done. And part of the virtue, I must say, of the online medium for this stuff, which is working better than I ever dared to hope it could. Together from all over the world map, we're having people in the Dream Teacher training now literally from Senegal to Seattle, from Vanuatu, literally, to Victoria. It's just absolutely fantastic. And the interplay of accents and cultural formation, etc., is wonderful. So dreaming is a global activity, a global entertainment, a global education. We need more of it. And our poor old Western society is suffering because we haven't been doing enough. And in that sense, we've been out of touch with the inner and deeper sources of imagination and soul purpose that we all need to be in contact with. All right, you've been listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. We'll be back for a brief moment after the break to say thank you to Wanda Birch.
C Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you are interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Thank you for joining us. Thank you, Wanda, for sharing your dreams. And to Wanda and everybody listening, may you grow big dreams and see them take root in the world in 2025.
Thank you.
All right. From now until next time, may your best dreams come true and may you remember them.